Hello, this is Orson Welles. We give you a radio, a Lear radio, for every letter we can use on this weekly broadcast. What kind of letter? Make it important or trivial. There aren't any rules, just make it interesting. Today's radio, for instance, goes to a lady who wants some travel advice. Dear Mr. Welles, she writes, I wonder if you'd speak on South America. I've read travel books about Buenos Aires and Rio de Janeiro in which these cities resembled Shangri-La, where the sun always shines and the people are always merry. I was on the verge of packing my little trunk and leaving immediately. Such a paradise would suit me perfectly. However, lately in the newspapers, I've been reading that Buenos Aires and Rio are hotbeds of fascism and political upheaval, in which the people are either Nazi bullies or members of the poor, downtrodden masses. If a person were to venture on a simple shopping expedition, he'd probably be caught up in a mob and shot by a magnificent policeman on a magnificent horse. You've traveled in South America, Mr. Welles. I wonder if you have some light to shed on this rather muddled matter. Yours very truly, Miss Evelyn Talia. Well, in spite of the strikes and shortages and all the other war and post-war worries, maybe because of them, lots of folks like Miss Talia are hoping to take a little trip of themselves to a foreign land or two or three, and because Europe and Asia are such poor, sad, hungry places nowadays, South America, from a tourist's eye view, looks better than ever. As one who's been lucky enough to visit every single country south of the border, who's been to the backlands of Mato Grosso, the remotest reaches of the Andes, who's followed the Amazon from source to mouth, who's talked to presidents in South America and revolutionaries and Nazi spies, I'm glad to be able to give Miss Talia a reply to her letter based on direct experience. We'll get to that in just a minute.
When you buy a Lear home radio, you can expect great things, for Lear radios have a unique background and a rare reputation in very exacting work. Ever since 1930, Lear has been making radios for aircraft. And from coast to coast, from Alaska to the tip of South America, Lear, L-E-A-R, is known as the name men fly by. This is why you can expect great things from your Lear home radio. It's why you'll find features in them that radios never had before. Things like the Lear tape recorder, for example. With this, you can capture a favorite radio program or an amateur performance by your friends or baby's first words. You can play the recording right back and keep on playing it for a lifetime if you wish. But on the other hand, what you don't want to keep can be whisked away off the tape just by recording something else. Tape recording is only one of the Lear special features. It's one of the great things you get in a Lear home radio. Now back to Orson Welles.
About your trip, Miss Talia, first of all, remember that South America isn't a country. It's a continent full of all kinds of countries, all of them different from each other. Nazi bullies, you ask, downtrodden masses, well, you'll find them all. Shangri-La, you'll find that too, or as near to it as any citizen has a right to look for. The Latin American economy is colonial or semi-colonial. Like our southern states, the first culture was based on slave labor, and the resultant social blemishes and social charms are very similar. There's much less racial discrimination. There's no lynching, but I have seen more than one Indian fall to his knees before his landlord and master. That was in the backlands, however, Miss Talia, and you aren't likely to encounter such a thing on a pleasure trip. Some of the country's easy to live in. Most of it's easy to look at. There's every sort of city. Sao Paulo is like a Portuguese-speaking Detroit. Montevideo manages to be very pleasant and very modern at the same time. Lima and Quito and Bahia are as picturesquely old as anything the old world had to offer before the buzz bombs and the blitz. The ruined cities of the Indians are the equal of the pyramids and Angkor Wat. The gay cities of the Latins are the gayest cities in the world today. Mexico City is the most cosmopolitan, and everything wonderful you've ever heard about Rio is absolutely true. Oh, excuse me, you heard you're likely to be caught up in a mob and shot by a magnificent policeman on a magnificent horse. No, ma'am, no. That's Buenos Aires, not Rio. There's just been a comparatively free election in Brazil after long dictatorship, and if there's any political upheaval, it's no worse than what you'll find in Washington. It's too late for you to get to Rio for the carnival. That's going on now, but try to make the next one. There never was anything like it anywhere else. A combination New Year's Eve, 4th of July, and Christmas morning, and then some, and then some more. Goes on for days, and everybody's in it. There's a saying that Rio spends half the year getting ready for the carnival, and the other half getting over it. You want to spend money? The newly finished Quintandinha, high in the mountains, an hour's drive from Rio, is the most luxurious hotel ever built, my man. Don't expect Latin America to be cheap. The absence of wartime government controls have brought inflation, and prices in some places are as high as here, even higher. Think what that means to a poor peon and his pennies. The count isn't in on the Argentine elections. As of this week, our hemisphere Hitler, Colonel Perón, is holding a slight lead. If he wins, don't go near the country or the countries he will rule. Might be better then if you visit Yosemite or the Grand Canyon. Matter of fact, if there's any more dictatorship in the world, you better stay home and quarantine. Fascism is catching. You won't be any too safe there. Hoping your trip will be everything you want it to be, Mrs. Taylor. I remain, as always, obediently yours. Well, from Europe, I hear that the reaction to our great Canadian spy scare is entirely one of amusement. A British wit has summed up our atomic energy policy this way. The Americans say there is no secret, and what's more, we're going to keep it. I wonder, does anyone imagine we don't have intelligence offices? You can translate that spies in the Soviet Union to check on how they're doing in their efforts to produce the bomb, and in Spain and Argentina to see how the Nazi scientists are progressing, and in England, too, to check on how much they learned during our joint work. The only difference is we have the bomb at the moment, so more intelligence offices, translate spies, are working here, and one of them got himself caught. Well known to its empire of readers is Time Magazine's slogan boast, curt, clear, concise. Just as familiar are fur-browed publisher Henry Luce's views on the American century, his wife's wisecracking globaloney dismissal of Henry Wallace's common man internationalism. No good friend of Red Russia is red-covered Time. Even when Time is not entirely clear or concise, it is invariably curt on the subject of the Soviet Union. This week of last week's cloak-and-dagger spy scare up in Canada, said Time, Ottawa well knew, and so did many another discerning Canadian, that the Russian search for scientific data in the Dominion was neither surprising nor reprehensible. The best nations do it, unquote. Responsible journalistic opinion on this is worth quoting because the fuss and feathers aren't without a smell of tar. In these bad-tempered times, the record needs to be kept as straight as possible. I want you to have more than my word for it that the Kremlin was not caught red-handed by the Canadian Mounties plotting the conquest of America. Time's view is more valuable here because Time's editorial policy is not avowedly liberal. For publishers like Mr. Hearst and Colonel McCormick, liberal is another word for communist. Some of you listening may read that kind of newspaper, and if I tell you what's going on up in Canada these days is a witch hunt, you'll think, there goes another one of those commies apologizing for Stalin. Well, that's the work of the witch hunters, the men who, for their own benefit, want to keep things as they are. They find a name to smear on everybody who wants to improve things. The improvements are always called dangerous foreign ideas. Thomas Jefferson's ideas, for instance, were supposed to have come from France, and the Americans who supported those ideas were called Jacobeans, in the same way Franklin Roosevelt's reforms and Wendell Willkie's One World Outlook were called communistic. Improvement itself, any kind of improvement, is written down as alien. Well, as a patriotic American, I resent this effort by the reactionaries to hand the Soviet Union leadership in the democratic cause. Stalin's Russia, with its secret police, occasional political terrorism, and constant party dictatorship, is less a liberal's model for government than that of the powerful subversives who call a liberal a red. Because I'm an optimist, I believe we can live in peace with Russia. Because I'm a liberal, I believe we should liberalize by example and by moral leadership Russia's political democracy, instead of which, by our tacit underwriting of Britain's repressive colonial policies, we're intensifying Russia's repressive policies. Of course, the American dollar is on an offensive of its own, but that's another topic for another talk. I wanted the point made today that all the hoopla and rowdy-dow about the Russian spies up in Canada doesn't amount to much. Unless we're suckers, it doesn't bring us any closer to war. And I can't leave this postscript about my own position without quoting myself once again on this matter of communism. As I've said many, many times before, we should not fight communism. We should compete with communism. An awful lot of hungry and unhappy people sharing this earth with us. It isn't much of a share they have, these slaves and semi-slaves, and they're beginning to ask for a better portion. Mr. Vyshinsky's hot and hasty words at the London conference had to do with oil and seaports, but were mostly a part of an appeal by the Soviet Union to those slave peoples who want to break their chains and need somebody's help to do it. Russia's going to get her oil and her seaports, a sufficiency. We aren't going to fight a war over that sufficiency, but Russia will be too big to live with if she ever speaks exclusively for the undernourished, the diseased, the ill-housed, the freedom-yearning world majority. If Russia wanted war with Britain and America, it could never gain the strength to fight that war.
with the Britain and America of the Four Freedoms. The Britain and America of the Four Freedoms would never fight that war, would never have to. But the fear of war is everywhere. It echoes in an argument in London, a speech in Washington or Moscow. Ordinary folks doing their ordinary jobs don't talk too much about that fear of war. They don't want to think about it. But they've caught the plague. You can smell it in the air. The stench blows around the world from Hiroshima. We conquered the atom, but the atom bomb has conquered us. The Canadian spy hysteria has put Congress in a mood to pass the May-Johnson bill, which puts the emphasis on the bomb and not on the peaceful uses of the energy. The bill has all the possibilities in it of establishing a fascist dictatorship. Because of the desperate urgency of the situation, I can reveal that President Truman agreed yesterday morning, after a talk with people inside of the administration, to get the congressional leaders together tomorrow morning and make them promise to try to keep May from putting his bill before the House. More about that in just a minute. But first, your attention, please, for an interesting announcement.
Earlier in this program, I told you about Lear Sound on Tape, a new kind of recording you find on Lear radios that's way ahead of wire recording. This is just one of the new features you find on these handsome, fine-working radios. There are many others, such as television, worldwide shortwave, FM, and a unique method of selecting your station and adjusting the volume by remote control. You can sit in your easy chair anywhere in the room and roam the airwaves without touching your radio set. All this may make it sound as though Lear radios must be expensive, but actually they are not. Lear radios are priced over a wide range with models to suit everyone. The finest of them all, a console combination with everything, including television, costs about $500. And on the other hand, for a smart, good-looking, capable table model, you pay only $19.95. But no matter what you pay, you can be sure that you get the most value for your money in a radio made by Lear. L-E-A-R. Now back to Orson Welles, whose views and opinions are his own and do not necessarily represent those of Lear Incorporated.
One of the chief concerns of the Founding Fathers was to keep power in our American government out of the hands of the military. Until just now, it looked as though they'd succeeded. The May bill covering the atom bomb calls for a commission of 9 men with no limitations against members of the Army and Navy on active service from becoming members. One provision of the bill gives this commission full authority to issue restrictive regulations over and above the Espionage Act on dissemination of scientific information with criminal penalties for violation. You can see what that means. The May bill, that's the bad one. The good one has been introduced by Brian McMahon of Connecticut. It specifically puts atomic energy under the complete control of the government and in the hands of a 5-man commission, all of whom must be civilians. Under the May bill, private production and ownership of fissionable materials, uranium, for instance, can be authorized. And the May bill, that's the bad one, makes no provision on patents. The commission may buy or condemn private patents or permit their restrictive use. And you can see what that means. McMahon's bill, that's the good one, is locked in the committee, most of whose members are strong anti-liberal Democrats and Republicans. Jim Newman, who's working on the committee, saw the president Thursday on the possibility of presidential pressure to get the McMahon bill out of the committee so that the fight for intelligent control of atomic energy could be made in public on the floor of the Senate. President Truman promised to do what he could, but he pointed out that there's not one man, aside from McMahon, whom he can deal with. May, whose bill was already reported out of the House Military Affairs Committee, is threatening daily to bring his bill, the bad one, up for House consideration. If he carried out his threat, the bill would probably be passed. Administration lobbyists and executive pressure boys are busy still trying to get Pauly in and have no time for housing, OPA, or anything else at the present time. Well, speaking of time, my time's up. Thanks for letting me come to call. Join me next week. Until then, speaking for my sponsors, the makers of Lear Radio, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.